Welcome back to another edition of the Sound Singer Podcast. My guest today is Brenda Earl Stokes. Brenda's a singer, musician, and music and voice educator specializing in creative and practical training for the 21st century musician. Brenda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
How did you get started on your musical journey?
Well, I took, like many, you know, Canadians, I started taking, you know, Royal Conservatory of Music piano lessons when I was like really little, like 4 or 5 years old. And, you know, never really found my bearings in what I was doing. I mean, I played clarinet in elementary school and all through high school. And it was clear I was probably going to do something in music, but I wasn't completely sure what it was going to be. But when I was exposed to Oscar Peterson when I was 15 in high school, I was like, that was the missing piece of the puzzle for me.
Wow. And you are Canadian, right? But you're based in—
I am. Yeah, but I've been in New York for a long time now, so.
You were just telling me before we got started that you're still a regular gigging musician, professional.
I am, yeah, absolutely.
So you're juggling both careers, music educator as well as a performer. How is that for you?
It's a mixed bag. I mean, since the pandemic, I have not been playing nearly as much music. I also started an online course business that has been very time consuming. But, you know, this spring has been pretty busy for me musically. I've played at Birdland, and I've done a couple of solo shows, and, you know, I've been rehearsing with a couple of different bands. So it's, you know, I try to keep the balance for sure.
So can you tell us a little bit about your ongoing program for musicians?
Yeah, so I was kind of an early adopter of online course platforms. Back in 2018, I created my first course, Piano Skills for Singers. And the concept behind it was I wonder if there's a way I could teach the first 12 lessons that I teach people and make it available to more people. And it was more because I was so busy and I didn't really have time for more students. And I thought that this would be kind of a budget-friendly way to help people get into it. And somehow 500 people went through it. And wow. It was just amazing to me. And then as people were going through it, they're like, when's level two? And so I went, okay, I'll make a level two. And then when's the jazz class? Or what about an improv class? Or do you teach solfege? And so it kind of grew until I had a total of 9 courses. And then back in 2020, I used my newfound time, thanks to the pandemic where all my concerts got canceled, and decided that most people actually needed little bits of everything. So I turned it into a membership called the Versatile Musician. And as a member, you get access to all of the material, which now consists of, I think it's 15 full courses and over 700 videos and printables. And we also do a monthly live Zoom workshop where the members will tell me what they want to work on, and then I'll present something to them. So this summer, we actually have a bunch of extra stuff that I'm doing for them. So that's been really cool. I've gotten to connect with a lot of different people all over the world who are working on different parts of their musical lives.
You did a recent video in response to a social media post on the subject of music theory and if we really need it or not. Can you talk to us a bit about the necessity of music theory?
Yeah, well, this was precipitated. I won't name the company, but there are several of these online, you know, course companies who are teaching piano who are like, oh, don't bother with music theory, or all the fun of piano without the music theory, or don't waste your life learning music theory. And I had like a little rant video that I made. And then I was like, this is crazy. And I wrote a whole article about it. And I made a full length, like a 15-minute YouTube video kind of explaining that music theory is literacy, right? That's what music theory is. Music theory isn't a dusty textbook taught by some old man with a goatee, you know, like in glasses. It's music theory is literacy. And so music theory doesn't mean that you're doing modal counterpoint. It's not a class at a university. I mean, it could be all those things, but music theory is understanding how intervals work, how chords are built, how the scale is put together. Music theory, in my opinion, also encompasses ear training and musicianship. So being able to read single lines, being able to read your melody line, like all of these components comprise music theory. And so I know there are other alternatives to learning piano where they have like the keys light up or like little laser beams that show, you know, there's millions of this stuff on YouTube. I look at it all the time and I'm like, wow, this is really a backwards way of learning music. So you know, without going on all day about it, music theory is, it's empowering, and it's also shouldn't be made out to be something that is so hard that you have to be some anointed person to learn it. It's really for everybody to know.
And you've made it so accessible on your YouTube channel, going in depth into how to play chords and scales and offering us some tips. Over the years, I've always encouraged singers to take up a musical instrument. And even though many of them have had a good ear, I truly feel like knowing piano would really help them. What are your thoughts on musicianship specifically for singers?
Well, the piano for me is like the most, you know, like I can't remember what food it is, but they say it's the most perfect food. Oh, I think it's an egg. The most perfect food, right? I think of the piano that way. The piano in so many ways is the most perfect of the instruments that I'm excluding voice. But for any instrument, if you were going to be studying something to support your singing, piano, I would say, is number one. And for a lot of reasons, the first being that it is a very visual instrument. And unlike guitar, where it, you know, you've got hand positions, but it's not linear, it's not vertical, it's not horizontal, it's sort of combinations of things that you can't necessarily see. With the piano, it's literally laid out in front of you in actual black and white. And so to be able to learn your intervals that way, to be able to understand music theory, again, major and minor chords, but it also, as you're learning these things, you can train your ear very easily, because as you're playing chords or scales on the piano, you're hearing them, right? And so in a way that you can't hear that when you're singing, because you can't sing a chord by yourself, you know, unless you're doing that weird overtone singing. But barring that, it's really the place where you can get the most traction. So I always recommend that every singer, regardless of their genre or what they're planning to do with it, that they have some connection to the piano. And I have found that even people who initially were like, eh, I don't really want to bother, or this isn't what I'm interested in, have always thanked me when I say, let's try a couple of things. It always has a huge payoff.
I love the videos where you're showing us like the finger position on the chords. Do you have any tips for singers who accompany themselves who would like to enrich their chording?
Well, the biggest thing, and the way that I teach this, and this is reflected in all of my courses, is I teach what I call a hybrid approach. So it's not the traditional approach, which is all reading by eye, but it's also not the sort of pop approach, which is everything by ear. It's really a combination of both of those things. So when I'm teaching singers to accompany themselves or to utilize the piano, once you can play your major and minor chords, then what I teach is a variety of accompaniment strategies. So in my Piano Skills for Singers Level 2 course, which is the one that I think like 600-700 people have come through, I have 18 different accompaniment strategies that I teach. And within those 18 accompaniment strategies, there's literally a little bit of something for everybody. And so on the very simplest of terms, the accompaniment strategy is, what is your left hand doing? What is your right hand doing? So if you're playing a waltz, it might go left, right, right. If you're playing, you know, a pop ballad, it might be both right, left, left, right. And what it is it's just such a simple way to get a couple of those accompaniment strategies under your fingers. And what ends up happening is one accompaniment strategy works for like 100 songs. Think of all of the different power ballads there are, or waltzes, or, you know, like different like up-tempo pop rock, or different like the Charleston figure or the Treseo, all of these different rhythmic accompaniment strategies. So I teach each one of those strategies individually and then say, here's a list of songs that use it. Go use it, right? So I have found that this is the most efficient way to be able to teach it. And then people can level it up as they need to, or just say, I only need 3 of these. I'm good.
What do you think keeps musicians away from focused practice versus playing? Like, can you share some practice tips with us?
Yeah, so I think some of this is the inner game of tennis stuff, right? And I think that we kind of all need to do a shakeup on what counts as work, right? And I have my son is 11, and he's been studying with piano with me for many, many years. And he's the only student I've ever had in my life who I've lived with, right? Like, I haven't lived with any of my students before. And a lot of times I think people are like, well, I've got to practice 30 minutes or I've got to play my song three times or I've got to do my vocal warm up and then work on my song three times. And I don't think people really understand that practice is an agent of change, right? Practice is when you go in and you roll up your sleeves and you do the good, the bad, and the ugly, and you start with the ugly and you work on the bad. And so that's always what I try to help my students and the members in my membership to stop and really think, what is it that, first of all, setting a goal, right? A long-term goal of like, what's the point of all of this, right? It's like super macro goal. And I do this for everybody. Maybe the goal is that they have auditions for college auditions, and that's the big goal of the year. Maybe the goal is they want to get from level 3 to level 4. Maybe the goal is they want to learn, you know, they've been playing jazz, they want to learn pop, whatever that big goal is. And then we start to set weekly goals of like, well, what are you going to do between now and when I see you next week? What's going to happen? And to have people learn to be able to self-assess and say to themselves, did I make any progress today? What did I do? What was the agent of change? And that can be something like, you know, 16 bars of a piece and you start working on the next 16 bars of the piece, or that you turn the metronome and you do that work on. So this is the way that I try to really have people to start to look that way themselves. And I think a lot of people come into lessons. The culture that we're in too now, where we give so much direction to everybody and they require so much like support, is to be teaching my students to do some of that work themselves. This is what I'm listening for. You know, are you noticing? You know, using a lot of that terminology until someone can say, you know, I don't have to wait for my teacher to tell me what to do next. I can stop and say, what do I think is the next thing?
Wow. And these are actually life skills. When you think about it, a piano lesson and the journey of being a musician and studying an instrument and the discipline it takes to practice, these are lifelong skills that you can apply to anything in life.
Right. And I mean, that's the whole point, is that nobody else is going to be running the show for you unless, you know, unless you're in kind of an unhappy situation and someone's running the show for you. But to have people feel empowered and be able to ask those questions of themselves. And again, my son is now learning an instrument with somebody who's not me. He's taking clarinet lessons with a good friend of mine. And it's the same thing where he's like, well, she just told me to play my scales. And I'm like, well, did you put the metronome on? Oh, well, no. She didn't tell me to. It's like, well, why do we do all of these things? Like, think beyond what is required of you and ask, what can you really do for yourself? Are you counting? Are you playing legato? Like, asking all of those questions. And so this requires that we teach our students what the parameters are, like, what is it that we're even our goal is, or what we're working towards, and then encouraging people to take the next steps.
Absolutely. It builds self-awareness. It builds confidence.
Absolutely.
I love that. And I just want to get your thoughts on where we are in terms of music education as a society nowadays.
Well, that's a big question.
Did I just open a can of worms? I probably did.
Yeah, it's a can of worms. Well, what I would say is, you know, the fact that there are so many specialized music programs all over North America and all over the world, I think is great. The fact that there are, you know, CCM programs, contemporary commercial music programs, and it's not just classical or bust, or classical or jazz or bust, now that there are lots of other options. So that's a really great thing that you can go and, you know, specialize in all of these things. I think the danger comes when we get to a level of specialization that gets to be silly, where people are like focused so deep into one frame of mind that they're not actually working on being a complete musician. And I think that is something that everybody needs to really think about, you know, that if you get into a super hyper specialized place and you're missing a lot of other skills, then you're actually going to be at a severe disadvantage when you actually get out into the world. I don't know very many people who are working only in their specialty. I mean, you know, like Rihanna Gibbons, who just won the Pulitzer, like she's pretty specialized in what she's doing, but she just won a Pulitzer. So that's cool. But the rest of us are doing a mishmash of things, and we really need to have a breadth of skills. This is hence why I started this whole company, The Versatile Musician, because I think versatility not only helps in employment and vocation, you know, in opportunity, but it also helps for you to have more access to more artistic resources as well. And so if you're a singer-songwriter and you don't play an instrument, you're going to be severely limited by that. If you're a singer-songwriter and your rhythm skills aren't really strong, then you're going to be severely, you know, held back by that when you're trying to work with a band. If you're a pianist who have no singing skills or no knowledge of vocal pedagogy, I think it's the same thing. I think for all of us, it's really important that we be keeping our eyes on the fact that we really want to be complete, versatile musicians.
Absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree. There's something to be said about learning piano as an adult. I just want to cover that because I have many clients who come to singing later in life, and they did take piano as a child, but something got in the way and they didn't continue with it. And very often they're interested in maybe going back and studying it because they realize the value, just like you had articulated before. Can you tell us what it would look like for an adult to go back to studying piano?
Well, it does. It's not a big deal. It's really not. And that's, I think, what I'm always trying to explain to people, that whatever their experience, I know a lot of people who have trauma around their piano experience because it was taught in the traditional way. And I think, again, there are certain wonderful things about the traditional way. But one of the limiting things is, you know, for me, I went through the Royal Conservatory of Music, which I think is fabulous. And my son is going through it right now. But the issue that I had with it is it was very disjointed from what was important to me. I didn't understand what the scales and the technique stuff was for. It was just felt to me like a punishment. And I didn't really have a strong sense of the ear training was exercises. You know, it was, so I think addressing that first with people and clarifying, like, what is it that we're trying to do? What's the purpose of this? It's not just a random set of things you do because teacher says so. So once I clear that concept up, then we go into really simple stuff like, how do you play major and minor chords in 12 keys? Because once you can do that, you can play every song. Literally every song in the Western canon is comprised of major and minor triads. And sure, maybe there's some other notes added in too, but if that's all you do, you know, that's a really great place to start. And if you can start from there and just some very basic treble clef reading, then you've got somebody who's empowered, who's engaged, and that can happen over the period of a few weeks. I've worked with students who have never played in their lives, and within two lessons, they can play Let It Be on the piano and sing.
Amazing. Yeah. That's so inspiring to hear that.
Sometimes in one lesson, if that's all we're doing. Yeah, we can do it very, very quickly. It's a minutes instead of months kind of thing.
It's never too late.
Right. It's never too late. And for a lot of people, you know, a huge amount of folks that are in my studio now are actually, you know, not intending to go on and have a professional career in music. They're doing it for fun and for joy. And it's like some of my favorite people to work with because, you know, they're there for the right reasons. They practice because it's their recreation. It's their expression. And it's really been wonderful to work with people. I have two guys that started the same week. This is in here in the studio in the city. And both of them came. They wanted to learn jazz piano. Neither of them had ever played piano before. Wow. And that was in October. We're in May. And both of them can play at a level where I could send them to go and play in a jazz band. Like, they have the skills. And it wasn't a big deal. And it's been really, really fun. And they had busy weeks and slow weeks, you know, where they had time to practice and time not to practice. And it's been really incredible to see what they're able to do.
So they had no prior piano training.
That's zero. Amazing. One of them had played flute as a young child. The other had never played music before. And they're having a total, both of them are having a blast. And it's been a terrific experience, you know, for all of us. It's been so much fun.
You know, I love that because it gives me hope. Very often I take a piano lesson with my jazz teacher in town. And whenever I take the lesson, I feel really challenged in the lesson. I feel like it's a brain workout. And afterwards, I feel like I've gone to therapy. Now, it won't replace therapy.
Right, of course not.
But I gotta say, it's so therapeutic. It, like, something happens and I feel alive again after my piano lesson.
Yeah, it's a fabulous thing. I have a woman who studies with me who's in her early 70s, and she said she could do crossword puzzles or she could do piano. And I mean, it's funny for her to say that because she is a really fantastic singer and pianist. I mean, she's really wonderful. I would send her out to work in gigs. Like, she's that great. But it's something that is fantastic for you and is enjoyable to do.
That's so awesome. Well, just a couple more questions and then I'll let you go
Absolutely.
because I know you got a long day ahead of you. But your career has taken you to international stages. What do you do to prepare for performance?
Oh, okay. Well, I prepare the same way I sort of described, when you asked me about practicing. So this is something that I kind of discovered when I released a very sort of, for me, challenging album in 2013 or 2014 when my son was only one. He was 1 year old, and I was preparing to do this album of complicated music. And I realized that I didn't have the hours that I used to have. And so what I made is what I call the poop list.
I love it.
I have a practice download that I give a lot of my students, and it has the poop list on it. And basically what it is it's what needs to be done. It's like a to-do list. What needs to be done on each of the songs? Not every song needs to be played all the way through and sung all the way through. Sometimes there's a few chords that I'm struggling with. Sometimes it's a vocal range thing or it's a lyric thing. Sometimes it's like the solo section where I need to improvise, I'm having difficulty with, and I make a very, very specific list of things that need to be done. So when I have 20 minutes to sit and play between students, I can sit down, I have a list, and I play. And so I did a solo concert a couple weeks ago. It was the first full, like, 90-minute solo concert I've done since the pandemic. And I was doing a lot of really challenging music, literally solo, just me, myself, doing a lot of really complicated stuff. And I did the same thing. I brought the poop list back and, made the list of all the things that needed to be done. And, I sat and worked on it and then ran the list a couple of times and I was done. So it really works for me every single time.
That sounds so efficient because I think a lot of times musicians and singers burn themselves out by like rehearsing everything from beginning to end.
And there's something to be said about that too. Like, sometimes that is also extremely important to take the time to do that. So I don't neglect that. I know my process really well, but I would say for most people, they're not practicing the poop list way enough that they should be making the list of what needs to be done and tackling those kinds of things. With music, it's hard to tell. Like, when is it done? When is it done? But what you can do is think of things as being, as having a to-do list. Like, if you do the laundry, you know that the laundry isn't done if it's all over the floor, right? You know that you haven't finished cleaning the bathroom if there's a bucket of water with a mop is still in it. And so I think it's identifying the parameters of what does it mean when something is done? Like, what does that look like? What does that entail?
Did you hear that, everyone? Create a poop list.
The poop
The
list.
poop list.
It used to be called something else that maybe was more like swearing, but I decided I should change it because, like, let's not like make it inappropriate for people. So it's the poop list.
Yeah.
It sounds cuter that way.
I love that. That's a huge takeaway for me. And I hope to share that with my clients. So,
Please do.
Brenda, this has been so great. How can people find you?
They can find me on my website. So it's pianoandvoicewithbrenda.com. There's all kinds of great stuff there. And if they're, feeling called to, they can, I've got great free printables and stuff you can check out. And then that's a great place to go if you want to check out the membership, the Versatile Musician. It is super, super cost efficient for what it is. And a lot of voice teachers send their students there to get, because there's a whole course in solfege and rhythm skills. And I deliberately don't teach any vocal stuff so that singers and voice teachers can trust that their way of working vocally with their students is going to be preserved, because I don't touch that on the membership at all. I think there's two vocal like little warm-ups for solfege exercises, but that's it. So that's a really great place to go, and you can stay for a couple of months or a couple of years, as long as you need.
That's so awesome. And on your Instagram handle is
Brenda Earl Stokes, I think.
Brenda.
Yeah, I think that's
Great.
it. Brenda Earl Stokes. Yeah, you can find me on there.
Brenda, thank you so much. And I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule today. And I hope to have you back on.
That would be great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.